Welcome to MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Terry West to the broadcast. Terry is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Performance Food Group, or PFG, a role he's held for nearly 6 years. With annual revenues of $16 billion, PFG is one of the nation's largest food service distributors. Prior to joining the company, Terry was the Vice President of Information Technology for Conagra Foods. During his 10 years there, he was instrumental in leading the consolidation, centralization, and standardization of the company's information systems and services organization. Terry also served in the U.S. Army for nearly 21 years. He earned a bachelor's degree from the University of Nebraska and a master's degree in systems technology from the Naval Postgraduate School. I recently interviewed Terry in his office in Richmond, Virginia, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 2, infrastructure, as Terry shared the methods used to modernize PFG's infrastructure, and Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed the way in which IT drives value in areas like procurement, warehousing, supply chain management, customer service, and delivery. We also covered the remarkable change he's been a part of, from private equity-owned company through mergers and acquisitions, to going public last year, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Terry West, welcome to the Forum on World Class IT.
Thank you, Peter.
Great to speak with you this morning. Terry, I thought we'd begin with your company. You were the Chief Information Officer of Performance Food Group. I wonder if you could just give us a basic definition of the business, what it does, and then also the context of IT within this business.
Sure. Performance Food Group is a wholesale food distribution company. We're number three in the industry. We're a national company. We focus on delivering food to the restaurants from a independent restaurant operator through the chain operators. We also have a business segment that focuses on candy, snack, and beverage, and we do many different types of distribution through that unit to include the theaters across the nation, so the concession, all of the candy, snack, and beverage for concession. We do hotels in many cases. We do college campuses and so forth. So a very broad capability that we provide there, again, nationally, out of 24 different distribution centers in that unit. And then we've got a customized distribution unit that we call Performance Food Group Customized Division. And they actually focus on the national casual dining type of restaurants. So many of those, you know, Cracker Barrel is a 30-plus year customer that we really grew with, quite frankly, with that particular division. And then over the years, for example, the most recent add to that division is Red Lobster nationally. So we're a little over $16 billion company. And the information technology organization, one of the things that I learned when I came here about 6 years ago was how real-time this particular industry is. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. The cycle from ordering, our customers order today in many cases for delivery tomorrow. So as you might imagine, we go through the whole process in the business cycle of ordering the right products, receiving those products into a warehouse, putting them away, making them available for the actual selection process and delivery. We have salespeople out there doing the sales cycle, and then the ordering process that will occur, those orders will come in, we'll process those orders. We'll have a end-of-day process, obviously, where there's got to be a cutoff. But, and so those orders get processed, They go through various systems, and it creates many things for us in a warehouse. So first of all, it thinks about how do I take the orders for distribution center A, how do I route those the most efficient way with our transportation asset, with our delivery asset. Then, based on that, we'll generate the selection process. And that selection process, then, you send it through to the warehouse. It has to generate labels. It has to then, we use a voice system that the selectors go through the warehouse and do their selection, verification that they've selected the right product, take it to the dock, the process of loading our transportation assets and then delivery. Frankly, we'll have transportation assets out the door very early in the morning in many of those centers to begin deliveries. Everything from ordering by 4 o'clock today and delivering as early as 8 o'clock in the morning the next day is how that becomes such a real-time business model that the information technology systems that support that are so critical to our ability to serve our customers. And one of the other things that I found our business model, really this industry, but certainly we PFG, we have a fill rate of 99.98. I mean, it's literally almost 100%. We can do that many ways, but fundamentally, what that suggests to you is we do this process really well, but if the system fails, you can imagine the interruption to the fill rate, to the customer satisfaction, delivery on time. That all is very much disrupted. So you've got the standard ERPs that all companies operate on from a financial, you know, just the transactional systems and so forth. But I think what is critical for folks to kind of understand about our business probably is that 24-hour cycle, that real-time nature of what we do, and then how we try to, obviously, we're very customer-focused, so the systems have to be part of that.
That's great. And you mentioned there are several business units within the organization. Yes. How is IT organized? Is it centralized, federated, some sort of hybrid model?
It's a hybrid model.
Yeah.
You know, we have three business units, and frankly, we don't operate as a holding company, nor do we actually operate as a single operating company at the top from a corporate perspective. So we have a bit of a hybrid. We do all of our infrastructure for the two major divisions centrally, so all through my organization. And then our customized division we do pretty much independently based on their business model being not so real-time, if you will, because theirs are all planned on usually a 2 to 3 day cycle with their customers in terms of that. So we've actually continued to operate one of the divisions almost as an independent company under our umbrella. The other two are centralized and operated across the organization.
You mentioned, Terry, that you've been here roughly 6 years as CIO, and that 6 years has been quite eventful. When you joined, the organization was under private equity ownership. It went through a series of major mergers and acquisitions to form the different business units you've just been describing. So gone from a much smaller organization to now, as you point out, a roughly $16 billion revenue organization. And then in October of last year, 2015, you went public. So that's quite a bit of change. And I wonder, as you have gone through that journey, how you have thought about the different transformations, big and small, that you've had to go through. Each one of those things that I mentioned would be a challenge for many IT leaders. I think of the integration that's necessary through mergers and acquisitions. I think about the preparation of all sorts of systems to make sure they are ready for the scrutiny of the public markets. Can you talk a little bit about that journey?
I certainly can. Performance Food Group was actually formed through a private equity acquisition. Blackstone and Wellspring came together, working with our CEO, George Holm, to invest in what was then Vistar Corporation, and George was at the helm of that, leading as a CEO. The vision was to expand and become a true food service distribution company. And at that point in 2007, they actually purchased the Performance Food Group company and then merged those two together. And so the initial investment was to create the company of Vistar Corporation, which really was the candy, snack, and beverage type of a business unit, with, prior to even the acquisition by Blackstone, they had begun by actually acquiring a company called Roma. Roma is today still a major part of our organization, but it was a food distribution company that was focused on the pizza Italian market. And as you, many people will recognize the brand name of Roma, it's also, you know, much more than just the brand as well. So from the 2007 forward, I would say that, like most private equity plays, if you will, the investments by private equity, the investment strategy always is about how to get the synergies from this organization company together and then build it and grow it and then to either go public or someone else wants to invest and continue to grow that type of a company. So over the period of time from 2007 to today, I joined the organization in 2011. We were about $12 billion roughly at the time I joined, and now we're $16 billion. So it's been a good growth story over the last 5.5, 6 years that I've been here, obviously. But it is an interesting journey. As a private equity-held organization, part of when I joined the organization, they still had not reached the point where they had the full integration, if you will, where, especially from a technology and IT perspective for the company, it was still operating pretty much independent, three separate little organizations. Technology itself, the underlying infrastructure technology, really was in need of modernization. Disaster recovery as an overall enterprise organization needed to be established. IT business processes needed to be established from an enterprise perspective rather than the simple individual organizational levels, if you will. And so one of the things that was I had the first opportunity in the very beginning was, and I knew it as I took on the job, the company had been working through a outsourcing relationship. So they had, you know, gone out with an RFP, they'd done their due diligence, and they had gotten down to a single provider and not yet executed by the time I came on board. I knew that through the interview process, and so I came in with the opportunity to do a final assessment of this particular strategic move. And my actual due diligence in 45 days was to that, in all honesty, we needed to be bold and we needed to go and we needed to transform the information technology organization, and we needed to, if you will, even transform the technology itself. And my assessment was going through with the outsourcing arrangement was going to be painful. They always are. However, it was going to be a path forward that we could actually move at a very quick pace in comparison to trying to change an organization and a culture by changing out people and hiring additional staff or changing staff out if necessary, that type of thing. And I made the recommendation in March of 2011 to the board to proceed, and my recommendation again was not for cost-cutting purposes. It was, yes, we will, if we were looking at this as just a like-for-like kind of a scenario, we would save money. But the reality was that the senior executive team across the organization was voicing the concern that technology was limiting us from growing. So it was clear to me what we really needed to do was invest in the technology and help stabilize the organization and then help grow the organization. So, you know, one of the things that I was talking with you prior about was the investment in terms of this, right? So we did go through with this outsourcing relationship. We consolidated data centers, which I would say were really server rooms versus data centers. We moved into an enterprise-level data center. It's really hosted. It's not one we built or invested in, but we own our technology, we own our servers, the infrastructure, the software, and we put it into a Tier 3 plus data center that our service provider had already in place, and then created a very small start of a disaster recovery facility in another data center. With that, though, we began the investment strategy, and we went from literally somewhere in the neighborhood of around 15 basis points of IT investment to today, we're operating at 30 basis points. Still, for many CIOs, 30 basis points from a budget perspective, many people would be saying, how in the world do you do that? The reality is, in a low-margin business, you have to be very, very cost-conscious. How do I invest the dollars in any part of our business, but certainly within our technology organization? We've literally been able to double the investment. We went from a capital plan that for IT of, I will say, nearly zero. It certainly wasn't zero, but it was close, to over the last 5.5 years, the last 4 years, we've had $30 million of capital investment in technology. So, it's been very much a partnership with my senior executive leaders. I report to the CEO, so I have a seat at the table. I'm an officer in the company. The board challenged me, if you will, early on with taking on the outsourcing. It also challenged me immediately after that to come up with a multi-year strategy for technology for the company, which we did. And the board supported investment in that over the years. So we went from having to establish, kind of the fundamentals of an IT organization for an enterprise, not an IT organization for the separate business units, but more of an enterprise organization, still very lean, but implementing the ITIL business processes, solid incident management, solid change management, release, and so forth, so that you can actually have the controls and the capabilities that you can rely on. We have, over the years now, invested heavily in the operating company locations and with regards to standardizing the infrastructure that we operate those distribution centers. We call them operating companies because they do, for the most part, have a lot of decentralized decision-making and capabilities that we empower them with. And so ensuring that their systems will support that 24-hour cycle. They aren't going to get disrupted. We've done a tremendous amount of investment at the edge, if you will, as well as we modernized our data centers. We invested pretty early on as we were, you always take the opportunity when it presents itself. We actually invested in converged technology in our data center early. And so our capabilities to support the business from our central data center, and we have a mixed hybrid model with on-prem and cloud kinds of capabilities, but we still run the predominance of our business out of our hosted data centers. So we've invested heavily in our central data centers and then also those operating companies. We've built talent. One of the things I found, almost any organization, if you're not careful, you do not build your talent and invest in the people. So, we've obviously hired a number of people, and we continually try to invest in those folks from management through our technology teams. And so, I think we've made some tremendous progress over the years, and that's sort of the journey of private equity. Well, and then I guess we can move right to what about the difference between the journey you had to reaching the point of IPO?
That's right, exactly.
And then
roughly a year
on
ago.
On into, what are you doing today?
Yeah, please, please. We'd love to hear that. Just one pause, if I may, because sure. What I find really interesting about that story, you talk about the current investment levels, which, as you point out, for a lot of your peers would sound absolutely anemic, but you also make the very important point that you've doubled. And then as I'm hearing you talk about the other steps you've taken of modernizing your infrastructure, modernizing your technology, generally speaking, I have to imagine that you've actually developed some efficiencies along the way. And so that doubling in some ways represents, I don't want to put words in your mouth, you'll validate this for me, but represents an even greater lift in terms of the value that IT can create because you're, reducing the amount that you're spending or maintaining on a regular basis of your technology. Is that a fair assumption, Terry?
Oh, very much so. For most CIOs out there, the reality is converged technology, the newer technology and storage as well, with the data deduplication, the blade technologies, the virtualization technology, we can deliver so much for the dollar in comparison over the years. If you do invest in the modern technologies and do it right, you can certainly, doubling is even conservative, right? You can triple and quadruple your capability to continue to deliver for your business pretty quickly.
That's pretty
great. Then mix in that, you know, what fits in the cloud and how do you leverage the rest of the technologies that's available to us to do that.
That's great. That's really great. You were starting to mention, and we'd love to hear a little bit more about that, the preparation for and execution of the IPO, and now, of course, operating it as a public company, as an officer of that company, as you point out. Can you talk a little bit about what, if anything, sort of IT has changed in light of that difference in structure?
Well, I think the key difference is the requirements of publicly traded companies for financial reporting. And all of the SOX, the Sarbanes-Oxley requirements that public companies have to certify and attest to. And it's a major difference, actually. As a privately held company, you focus on ensuring that you've got good controls, you've got good business processes for IT as well. But when you get to being publicly traded, you now have very strict guidelines on what that means versus what you try to implement from a best practices perspective. It certainly sets you up well, but you know the challenge that I think companies face going from private to public is the tremendous amount of requirements around compliance and how you have to be able to show auditors that everything from your base, how you grant access to systems, what roles are set up to allow what types of capabilities are there, through your normal IT side of the equation with regards to change management and how well you are controlling code promotion and the segregation of duties for technology folks versus segregation of duties for business folks, right? So it's really quick and easy for many people to think about, well, you can't have a finance person who can post and change, right? They can't do functions that allow them to fundamentally change a transaction, right? If they can post, they can't change, if you will, right? Those simple things. In the IT space, it becomes really interesting when you haven't had a capability established in the early years around, you know, some form of a fire call or a fire ID process where you limit whether it's an application developer or a infrastructure administrator what they can do in production environments, right? So that's not established before you go public. It is a must-do after you go public, right? So there are some of those things that the quicker you know what path you're on from being private to public, and you can build those into a plan that you can do it over time versus in a very, very quick time frame, the better off you are. So this is our year of certification as a public company. You know, you've got one full fiscal year, and any portion of the fiscal year that you had during which you went public. So in our case, our fiscal year is July through June. So we went public in October, so we had part of a fiscal year, and then this fiscal year we're in now is the year which, you know, the SEC expects that you will in fact be Sarbanes-Oxley compliant, certified, and so forth. So you can imagine that we are in the process in partnership with our finance organization, working diligently through all of those to ensure that they're in place. And it is absolutely something that folks need to prepare for. I was in a publicly traded company before coming to Performance Food Group, ConAgra Foods. I was there for several years, and it was during the period of time where the Sarbanes-Oxley requirements were being established, and companies were establishing those and getting them in place. So I recall the process of doing it back then, But I would say all companies were having to go through it at the same time that were public. And so when one of the things that I certainly in the current journey is making our organization, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley compliant and making absolutely certain that we will pass those kinds of tests, right?
Yep.
And that's a journey.
That's interesting. We've been talking an awful lot about this really interesting and transformative journey of yours here at PFG over the course of the past 5 to 6 years. As you look forward, what are some of the things that are rising to the top of your priority list, your strategic plan? What's the team focused on now?
There's several. We are a company that has grown organically quite nicely, but clearly just from the story I've told about the major merger of two businesses together, and then the rest of the acquisitions and mergers that we've done over the years, we still have a complex set of systems that we run our business on. So some of our priorities still focus on the simplification and standardization of business process and systems. So that's still very high on our list, and we've got investments to do that.
I like that you took it in that order, by the way. The business processes first, then the systems.
It is very, very important to do it that way. There's no doubt. And I will say that it's not a natural way that many companies think about it.
And certainly not a natural way for a lot of CIOs who naturally wanted to go straight to the solutions in many cases.
Yeah. We've actually invested. One of the things that I'll divert slightly. One of the things we did do as we were working through a strategic program to standardize some systems, it was very important that we standardized business process. In other words, I was trying to influence our organization to understand that it's not about the system that we're implementing. It's really about the business processes, and then we automate the business process to be more efficient. You get the productivity out of that. Well, so what we did as we did some things in our strategic program that were pure technology, upgrading from version 3 to version 6 of an ERP as an example, in preparation for this standardization. We're a thin organization, as I already described from an IT perspective, but we're actually thin in the business as well. We don't have a lot of excess people. We've got people that work multiple hats, if you will. But one of the things I did in working with the largest business unit, our Performance Food Service business unit, was we established a business transformation team. And I had an individual that worked directly for me, one of my VPs, who I had brought in through one of our operating companies. He had actually was, you know, he grew up sort of in the warehouse and then became a technology guy and was their local technology person. We brought him up and got him into a position where he was learning the enterprise. But he had such great business process and business knowledge that coupled with the systems knowledge, we actually took him and moved him over reporting to the CEO of the business unit as the start of a business transformation team. And one of the things that I was adamant about was, and I'll say an easier path would have been to create that business transformation team in my organization, because frankly we almost began to pull folks out from technology, from the IT organization to create it, which is also a positive reflection on their knowledge of the business, not just the systems, right? So I felt just so strong that we needed that business transformation team as part of the business. It needed to represent the business, not be perceived as technology or a part of my technology team. So we did that, and over the last year, we started with one person. We created a core team of about 5 folks that came out of various parts of the company, you know, from operating companies, so people that are subject matter experts in procurement, in warehousing, transportation, and that type of thing, finance. So we built a little team for business transformation, and they're focused on business process standardization for that business unit, right? So major step in terms of us trying to ensure business process first, technology second, to enable that. So I diverged a bit there, but no, I think great. that was kind of an important step in talking about that.
I agree. You were in the throes of talking about some of the other priorities. So maybe another highlight or two.
So the other things that I would tell you, we as a company believe that we distinguish ourselves from our competition by our customer focus. We still invest heavily in our sales force, as an example. We've got a lot of sales folks out doing, you know, face-to-face consultative selling. And we believe in having technology that enables both the salesperson as well as the customer to have self-service capabilities, right? So a major focus area for us right now is the customer experience and what can we do to take what in many cases still are disjointed, very capable, very good systems, but they aren't necessarily tied together for the customer. So the customer has a bit of a disjointed experience with operating or interfacing with PFG from a technology perspective. So we have a high priority to improve our customer experience. We're investing in customer portal capabilities, make sure that there's single sign-on, ease of use for the customer to actually leverage what truly is pretty state-of-the-art systems individually, but not well tied together at the top, if you will, for that customer to have a nice, seamless experience. So we're investing heavily there as well. We'll continue to invest in ensuring that we keep our underlying technology modern and up-to-date. But I think I would say those are really two of the major areas that we're investing heavily in.
That's great. You mentioned before, and through this, your most recent anecdotes as well, just the degree of modernization that has taken place in IT. And I know from our past conversations that you are wary of buzzwords when you think about trends. I'm curious, as you and your team do think to the future, are there certain areas where you're particularly intrigued? Are there some trends that you think have greater credence or greater weight than others that you're beginning to kind of dip your toe in the water for?
I do kind of have this dislike for the buzzwords, but I'm going to use them, obviously, because we all do. The Internet of Things is an example. We as an industry, we have a lot of sensors that we do take advantage of. So it's interesting when we are at conferences or we're talking to peers and the question is, well, you know, what are you doing in the Internet of Things? Well, in reality, that trend, the ability to have sensors and connect to so many different data points out there is, I think, one of the critical trends that will continue to be influential, certainly in our industry, but probably everybody's industry. We today leverage, we've got a lot of transportation assets. We leverage a lot of sensors in our, from the cab to beginning to even the trailers themselves. And so I think the Internet of Things is one of those trends where we'll continue to see very positive influence across our industry and certainly our company. The cloud being public versus private, we have a hybrid model today, and we have not taken the approach to say cloud first. We say cloud where appropriate, right? So we do leverage a lot. Well, we have several software as a service providers. And I think that we'll continue to see more and more providers in various verticals that I think we all can should look at and more than likely take advantage of as we continue to move forward. The competition in that space, software as a service, platform as a service, the infrastructure as a service, all of those, the competition is getting greater and greater, so therefore the price tag for us customers of those services continues to improve, and their capability to truly deliver continues to improve. So it's a matter of timing. When is it appropriate? When do you move from either an on-prem type of a service to a cloud service? We're actually looking at, from an analytics perspective, we built analytic capabilities ourselves. There are some real interesting capabilities that we will begin to take advantage of here in the near future that, frankly, are in the cloud. And simplifies a lot of what you want to do in the future. So I would say there's just, for us, our industry, the Internet of Things, without a doubt, cloud to the degree of what the service providers are going to do, with software as a service, platform as a service, and so on. And quite possibly, for all of us, will you have your own data centers in the future? I tend to say that most of us will. It's just a matter of how much, right? What will we continue to have on-prem or in hosted facilities that we continue to control directly versus trust in put into a public cloud?
Do you have a perspective on self-driving vehicles, the extent to which that...
I think self-driving vehicles are very interesting technology. A little scary for me, just as a human being, in all honesty. In all seriousness, when you think about it from your own industry, your business, right? We've actually had conversations, well, what about self-driving vehicles? We've got transportation assets all over the nation every day. Do we believe that we will see a self-driving delivery truck from PFG to our customers? And the answer, quite honestly, is no time in the near future. And for us, it's probably less about the ability of technology to reach a point where you could dispatch and route and get vehicles to the right places. The reality is we still have to have the human involved anyway, because it's a delivery service, right? So we have to be able to offload the product to our customer. So I think we'll watch what's going on with technology in every one of these aspects. But self-driving, for us as an industry, probably not going to be real beneficial anytime in the near future. And again, it's a little scary even for me out there on the highways with self-driving vehicles. Some people would say it's going to be safer when everybody's got self-driving vehicles, because they won't allow themselves to have those accidents. But in this interim period, it's a little bit disturbing.
Yeah. Understood. Well, Terry West, thank you so much for your time today. You've been very generous with your time, but more importantly with your insights. We appreciate a great conversation.
Well, thank you, Peter.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not.
Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.